except this is one of those mandatory Sundays where we kick the kids out. So kids, you can leave. We are not kicking you out. We have another program for you. Now comes the really exciting part. We are not just letting junior high and under go, but senior high, you also will leave as well. Senior high, you can go and help down in the luncheon area. Now, parents, if after what you hear me teach on this morning, you think you would like your senior high child to hear it, go to the internet and watch the video or download it from audio. It's only 30 minutes. It won't hurt them to do that little 30 minutes time. But I want to be real safe about this. I don't want to be sharing anything this morning that you would not be comfortable having shared with your children yourself. And by the way, I am not saying anything that is not directly in the text. In fact, I have a lot of text to cover this morning. You'll find me just pretty much just reading the text, briefly explaining it, and quickly applying it and moving on. Because we're going to cover the entire fourth chapter of this book. So, here we are. Week 8 in our Solomon on Sex series. We have passed through the dating and relating stages. We've passed through the wedding procession. We are finally at the wedding night. And you can probably guess what happens on the wedding night, or what at least should be happening on the wedding night. The lights go down. The romance candle is lit, and this couple is finally intimate for the first time. Now, this chapter will give us a window onto the intimacy in their married life. God inspired this chapter. God gave it to us. It is a picture of what God-honoring marital intimacy and sexuality should look like. That is not my words. These are God's. And I think they'll be very helpful for us. Now, some of you may think there's TMI, which means too much information. Let me tell you, I am keeping this very high level. Go to seminary, learn Hebrew. You read the Hebrew, there is a lot more color in the Hebrew text than there is in the English. Trust me. Only one time in here will I tell you one Hebrew nuance that would be interesting to know. All right, before we jump into this text, I want to just start by a very general observation. Has anybody noticed that men and women are a little different? Yes, they are very different. John Gray wrote a book in 1992 called Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. You ever hear of that one? And it was a bestseller. He was instantly proclaimed the expert on the differences between men and women. And that's all the book just tried to detail, how men and women can take the same situation and look at it and see it totally differently. Now, nowhere is this more apparent than when you get married. Because you think it's all going to work out, but then all of a sudden you get smushed into the same house, the same life, the same problems are looked at from a totally different perspective by a husband and by a wife, because God has wired them to see things differently. And it's not just problems and issues that they see differently, but when it comes to intimacy and the way sexuality is experienced and understood in marriage, it is experienced differently by a man than a woman. Let me explain to you how they're different. For instance, it's in the point here in your bulletin. Women are primarily aroused verbally. I didn't say exclusively. I said primarily. In other words, guys, what you say to your wife will make a real big difference. If you are harsh with her, she's not going to be real interested in intimacy. If you are loving and you're calling, you're texting her during the day, she's thinking about what? Intimacy. Guys are a little different. Men are primarily aroused visually. Is that right, guys? Can I get an amen? the guys are like, yeah, I know. Yeah, we're primarily aroused visually. We see things and we're like, okay, I've got one thing on my mind. Right, that's just the way we're wired. Men and wired are wired differently. Now, not only, this is actually a good thing. Guys oftentimes like to say, I wish my wife was wired for intimacy like I am. No, you don't. God has wired your wife in such a way as to be complementary to you. She is different, but it is a good different. It is the way God has designed it. Now, as we put our finger in the text and we start to work our way, actually rather quickly, through this fourth chapter, what you will find is that when it comes to the wedding night and the way that Solomon and his bride relate to one another and the way they enticed one another, she is going to be enticing him visually, and he is going to be enticing her verbally. That's just the way they work. So let's go ahead and begin. Wives, here's the first point. Compliment your husband visually. And this is what she begins to do right away. And he responds very quickly. He says, "Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves behind your veil." Wedding night, probably a good thing to start with by telling your wife she's beautiful. I would think so. He looks at her. He's visually enticed, aroused. "You are beautiful, my dear." And he just can't help but say it to her. And that verbally entices her. And then he says to her, "Your eyes are like doves." And he's going to start at the top of her and work his way down, just complimenting her verbally. Now, what does he mean when he says her eyes are like doves? They're playful. They're beautiful. They're gentle. But I think the real interesting key comes at the very end when he says, "behind your veil." You have to understand that in this culture, a woman wore a veil on her wedding night. That's just the way it worked. You remember Rachel and Leah? Jacob didn't know which one it was. Why? Wore a veil. So, she's wearing a veil, but apparently he can see her eyes through that veil very clearly. In fact, we'll see he can see her face through that veil. What is this veil like? Burlap sack? Or is it thin, paper thin, transparent thin? It is either some kind of transparent paper-thin veil, or it is some kind of a lace veil. Now, this veil was originally meant to conceal, but she is using it to do what? Entice, isn't she? She is enticing her husband by the way she is dressing. Literally, this veil is an ancient piece of lingerie. That is what she is wearing for her husband. Now, this is a simple application here. Wives, did you know it's biblical to wear lingerie for your husband? The Shulamite did. And you're going, "I never thought I'd hear that in church." It's just the Bible. The Bible's very practical, guys. Continuing down the next verse. "Your hair is like a flock of goats leaping down the slopes of Gilead." Now, I tried that one with Cindy. We were at the gym, and she was in front of me. I said, "Honey, your hair is like a flock of goats." And she turned and gave me this really weird look, not quite too sure what to think of it. It didn't work for me. I tried it, but it worked for him. Now, why was this effective? Well, you have to understand that goats in this culture are usually black. Their hair is longer and sort of a wavier hair. Mount Gilead is a slope that goes up about 3,300 feet. There are some grassy regions on it, and shepherds would bring their herds up to these grassy regions when looking for good grass, and they would graze up there, and then in the evenings they'd go down. And he is picturing her hair like a herd of goats leaping down the mountainside of Gilead. Can you picture what's going on? She looks like she just did a Pantene commercial. You know, that's really what it is. Her hair is black. It is bouncy. It is wavy. And she's just, you know, using her hair. He likes her hair. That's literally what is going on here. By the way, simple application. Wives, ask your husbands how he likes your hair and respond accordingly. Page 2. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes that have come up from the washing, all of which bear twins, and not one among them has lost its young. Okay, we're moving off the black goats to the white sheep. Right. Okay, and sheep can get sort of dirty because they play outside. Except these are sheep that have just been shorn all the way down so they have the purest and whitest hair exposed. And they just came up from the washing, so these white sheep are nice and wet. Can you imagine what her teeth are looking like? White, shiny, and wet. And by the way, none of them have lost their twin. In other words, she has all of her teeth. Her parents had a great dental plan, and they took her to the orthodontist, is what this is saying. He likes the way she looks and her teeth, but how would he see her teeth? Is she like this? What are the only two things you're going to do to show your teeth? What you're doing right now to me, which is smiling, or somehow I don't think it's the second one. I don't think she's growling at him. I think she is smiling at him, which is why he sees her teeth and says, "You have a beautiful set of teeth." He loves her smile. Look at the checkout magazines, right? Just go simply through Walmart. What are all the ladies doing on the covers? They're smiling. Why? Because guys like when their wives smile. Here's the application. Wives, smile for your husband. I guarantee you he will love it. It's one way to bless him. She is enticing him and blessing him on their wedding night by smiling. Next one. Your lips are like a scarlet thread, and your mouth is lovely. Well, Mary Kay is not a modern invention. The scholars tell us here that she is wearing cosmetics. She is wearing red lipstick. Red lipstick, white teeth, a smile. Not much has changed, has it? He finds that very attractive about her. Look on the cover of all the magazines, the checkout counter. What do you usually find? A lady wearing red lipstick, white teeth, and she's doing what? Smiling, because it's attractive. He finds that very attractive. Now, by the way, this is not Tammy Faye Baker level of makeup. This is just red lipstick is what we're talking about here, okay? Now, I want to point out here, by the way, that cosmetics are not evil. Now, it sounds sort of strange, but I have talked to people in the past who felt like wearing any kind of wife wearing cosmetics was evil or sinful, but they're not. They're actually biblical. Cosmetics are biblical right here. So here's the application. Wives, cosmetics are not sinful. The Shulamite was wearing Mary Kay to look her best for her man. Now, interestingly, think about this. This is the wedding night. She still has on the veil over her face, which he can see everything. When was the last time you wore lipstick to bed? That's what she's doing, isn't it? She's not trying to look her best at that moment, but she's trying to look her... I'm sorry, backwards. She's not trying to look her worst. She's trying to look her best for her husband on her wedding night. Verse 3, halves of a pomegranate behind your veil. Now you're wondering, what is that? Pomegranates are slightly indented, so it's cheeks we're talking about. They're very red. What is she doing as she's smiling? She's blushing. This is a virgin girl who has never been with a man, who is very excited about enticing her husband, but she's also blushing because she's with her husband on her wedding night. Your neck is like a tower of David, built in rows of stone, and on it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. She has a long and a straight neck. Remember, she's a farm girl. She's a working girl. And what does she have on her neck? Jewelry. And it's one of those complex pieces that has all those little pieces attached to it. I don't know what you ladies call those things, but that's what it is. She's wearing jewelry for her husband on her wedding night. And why is she doing this? She's trying to enhance her looks to entice her husband. And her husband, as he sees her, he keeps verbally complimenting on her specifically about everything he likes about her that he sees. You see how he is enticing her by verbally complimenting her? She is enticing him by visually trying to serve him. So wives, it is biblical to wear jewelry. The Shulamite even wore jewelry to bed. Didn't know that. Biblical to wear jewelry. Now, why is she doing all this? Because she is seeking to visually entice her husband on her wedding night. That's good. I hope that she was doing this on her wedding night. Here's the application. Wives, go home and ask your husband what he would feel like if you approached him in the bedroom like the Shulamite approached Solomon. And then just act appropriately according to his answer. You guys can smile a little bit. It's good. It's biblical. Now, okay, he's worked his way down to the edge of the veil. What comes next? Things start to heat up a little bit here. All I'm doing is reading the biblical text. God said it. Before I did. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle that graze among the lilies. They are identical. And then he describes them as a young, playful animal. What does that mean? Well, what do you do when you go see a group of puppies? What do you want to do with the puppies? You want to pick them up. You want to snuggle with them. You want to play with them. They're so cute. These are the same reactions he is having to his wife's breasts on his wedding night. That's a good reaction, isn't it? Then he says this, until the day breathes and the shadows flee, I will go away to the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. He's working his way south. You can probably guess what part of her body that he is now talking about. What is going on at this point is he is beginning to come unglued in his thought life. He is becoming completely captivated by his wife's beauties. And what does he say he wants to do to his wife? He would like to make love to her all night long. That is literally what it says. Just read the text. Now, some of you guys are saying, well, I've said that to my wife in the passion of our intimacy, but I never realized it was actually biblical. It is. That's what Solomon says to his bride on his wedding night. It's biblical to feel that, and it's biblical to say that, guys. Page 3. You are altogether beautiful, my love. There is no flaw in you. Well, up to this point, it does sound like she is the perfect woman. But is she a perfect woman? No. No such thing exists. Once Eve sinned, she was no longer the perfect woman. Does she have flaws? Yes. Does she see the flaws? Oh, I'm sure she does. Remember when she saw herself in the mirror earlier in the beginning? She was dark-skinned. Everyone else is light-skinned. She was the working girl, and all the other girls are fair and soft, and she is dark from the skin, and she's, you know, all sort of broken-nailed because she works outside. She sees flaws in herself, but does her husband see flaws in her? No. What he sees is the perfect wife for him, that you are altogether beautiful, and that is what he says to her. Guys, your wife needs to hear that. She looks in the mirror and she sees her flaws. You don't see them. You look at her and you think she is beautiful. She is lovely. Tell her that. She needs to hear it. So husbands, your wife sees her flaws, honestly tell her she is beautiful to you. Then he says, come with me from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon. Depart from the peaks of Amana, from the peak of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of lions, and from the mountains of leopards. Well, up to this point, he has been putting on the compliments thicker than chunky peanut butter, hasn't he? What is this line saying? Up to this point, she has been visually enticing him with her lingerie, with her lipstick, and not much else. He has been complimenting her as much as he can. He is thrilled with her. After this point, they begin to actually touch. This is an invitation. Remember, it's an invitation to be his wife, to actually consummate the wedding night. Remember, she came from Lebanon, and we know that she came from a hilly, mountainous region of Lebanon. Remember in the dating one when he came to visit her, he bounced from rock to rock down the hillside when he came to her house? She comes from a hilly, mountainous region in Lebanon. He says, come away from all that. Come be my wife, be my queen. That's the invitation to intimacy right here. Now, before we leave this section, I think I'd like to make one point of application for the guys. We've done some fun applications for the ladies in the previous points, and here's the application for the guys. Husbands, before you touch your wife's body, touch her heart. Before you touch your wife's body, touch her heart. There has been a lot of time, there has been a lot of talk, a lot of compliments, a lot of tenderness on his part. He hasn't even touched her up to this point. But he has made her feel so special. Remember the bridal chamber? He's even painted her favorite color, green. How could she not be excited to be with him because he has been so attentive to her all the way through? And guys, oftentimes, we're not that attentive to our wives, and we wonder why she's not that excited to be with us. They're wired differently. Time and attention, that's what he gives her. All right, let's move on to this next section. And here they actually begin to become intimate. And here's the point. Just like we learned that wives were to compliment their husbands visually, husbands compliment your wife verbally. We're going to move here from talking and seeing to touching and experiencing intimacy. And here's how it starts. You have captivated my heart, my sister, my bride. You've captivated my heart with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace. What he's saying is, I am so enthralled and captivated by your beauty. One glance is enough to make me melt. One glance of your eyes makes me weak in the knees. I can barely stand. You are so beautiful. He's pretty excited about this. But I like the way he says this. My sister, my bride. Why does he call her his sister? In this culture, the only woman that you were allowed to have a good friendship with besides your wife was a sister in your own family. What he is saying is, you are not just my lover, but you are also my best friend. Isn't that neat? He's totally captivated by her beauty, but she is also his best friend, his sister, his bride. Now, husbands, tell your wife her beauty makes you melt. She'll get pretty excited about that, that you know that she has that kind of effect on you. But then say she is not just your lover, but she is your best friend. Next verse. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine and the fragrance of your oils than any spice. And here's the part where I'll bring out one little nuance in the Hebrew. Prior to this, the word for love talks about visual things, the things he loved to see visually. Beginning here, the word for love changes to a different word in the Hebrew. And it's talking about what he loves in the experience of his wife. What he has just said is, you are an incredible lover. He loves the way she is intimate with him. This woman is not a corpse in the bedroom. She is excited to be with him. She is passionate to be with him. In fact, he says, your love is better than wine. In other words, you, when you are my lover and as you love me, you are intoxicating to me. That's a compliment. He's constantly verbally complimenting her. He's complimenting her as a lover. And she's a virgin girl. Husbands, tell your wife she's a great lover and her love is intoxicating to you. Application there. It gets better. He says to her, your lips drip nectar, my bride. Honey and milk are under your tongue. Last time we dealt with the lips, she had red lipstick on. We've gone from looking at her lips, remember? Now he is experiencing her lips. And he is actually experiencing more than her lips. This is called French kissing. Long before France was ever around. So you can go and your friends say, what did you learn in church this week? You can learn that French kissing is biblical. And it's in the Bible. And you found it right here. So this is hot. This is passionate kissing. And you're saying, oh man, I don't know. This is a little weird. This is biblical. I mean, this is a couple on their wedding night. If this wasn't happening, wouldn't it be sort of weird? It's true. So, husbands, tell your wife she's a great kisser. That's how he compliments her, and this is how she compliments him. Then she says, the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon. He likes the way she smells. It's true. Some scholars think that this is because she's wearing perfume, but I disagree with that because he says the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon, where she comes from, which we learned was the place where cedar trees grow in a mountainous region. Do you think that the cedar have a distinct smell to it? Anybody who works with wood? Yeah. So do you think that region of the country has a very distinct smell to it? Yeah. He smells her and it reminds her of where she came from. And he likes the way she smells. I mean, that's sort of a compliment. We're not talking bad body odor here. We're just talking, I just like the way you smell. Now, this may be strange to some of you, but I know some women that when their husbands go out of town on business, they want to sleep with his shirt when he's gone. Why do they do that? Because it reminds, and some of you are laughing because I can see you do that. But it reminds her of her husband's presence and the smell of him when she's so often cuddled up to him at night. And this is what he's saying. He's saying, like, honey, when you're out of town, I want to sleep with your shirt because it reminds me of you. And I love the way you smell. Application. Husbands, tell your wife you love the way she smells. You may even want to sleep with her shirt when she's gone. It's practical. Okay. Then he says this, a garden locked is my sister, my bride, a spring sealed, a fountain sealed, or a spring locked, a fountain sealed. This is their wedding night. What is he doing? He is thanking her for her virginity. Thank you for being a garden that was locked, a spring that was sealed. Thank you for not sharing any of these delights that you possess with any other man other than me. Thank you for saving this all from our wedding night. Now, if anybody said that, you know, virginity is not found in the Bible and the thankfulness for it, there it is, right there. Be a virgin when you get married. We've learned this in last week's message. By the way, real practical, studies tell us that if you get married and you are a virgin, your experience of sexual intimacy and your level of satisfaction in your marriage is significantly higher if you are a virgin when you get married than if you're not a virgin. Or even if you sleep with the person before you marry them, it's lower. So it's the best thing you can do on an all practical level to get married as a virgin. Plus, it's biblical right here. Now, how does this apply to us who are married? I've been married for 20 years. What am I going to do with this verse? He is thanking her for the exclusivity of her love. She's not a woman who tries to garner the affections of other men plus her husband. She has saved all of her charms for her husband, and she focuses those charms on him and him alone. Guys, when was the last time you ever thanked your wife for her being such a beautiful woman, but saving those charms for you alone? Thank her. Thank her for her exclusivity. So I'll put that one right down here. Husbands, tell your wife you're thankful her love is exclusive. Newlyweds, thank your spouse for their virginity. Now it gets interesting. We're not going into the Hebrew, and we're even keeping the language of the English a little high here. Your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with all choicest fruits. Henna with nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all choice spices, a garden fountain, a well of living water, and flowing streams from Lebanon. There are two sort of analogies he's giving here about his wife. He says she is like all these exotic spices and all these choice fruits. She's like a garden. And this is what's interesting. If you look where these particular things come from, they're exotic spices that are found from different places around the world. You'd have to travel to get them. But all these choice fruits and delicacies are found in one place, in one garden, his wife. You see how he's saying this? You are a garden of delights to me that, you know, that's the one place I go to find it. Now, also in this climate, which is extremely dry, what is very valuable, what is very refreshing? Water. She is the source of refreshment in his life, not just the source of delight for him. That's why he describes her as a well of living water and flowing streams. So in the desert of his world, she is the oasis of refreshment in his life. And not is she just the oasis of refreshment, but she is the source where all the choice pleasures in his life come from. Application. Tell your wife that intimacy with her is more refreshing than any other earthly pleasure. That's in essence what he's saying to her. Now, let me hang up another word to the husbands here as we get into this next verse. This is, in essence, what this next verse is going to say. Husbands, focus on serving your wife instead of yourself. Very important here. All of a sudden, once we have this garden analogy that his wife is like a garden, he says this, "Awake, O north wind, and come, O south wind. Blow upon my garden, let its spices flow." What is this? In this part of the country, when north and south winds would blow upon the crop, that's what you would want as a farmer. North and south winds would have your harvest grow, provide the right kind of rain, the right kind of moisture, the right kind of warmth. It would mean you get a good crop. West winds usually brought storms. East winds usually brought wilting, blistering heat. You didn't want east and west winds. You wanted north and south winds. And what he is trying to do here is saying he wants to focus on the pleasures for his wife rather than pleasures for himself in intimacy. He's focused on fulfilling her desires, not his own. So here's the application. Husbands, tell your wife that satisfying her needs is more satisfying than fulfilling your own. That is literally what he's saying here. I want to focus on fulfilling her needs. Now, she says this. She finally speaks. After he's been doing all this verbal complimenting, after she's been doing all this visual and physical enticing, what does she say? Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its choicest fruits. She's finally ready for intimacy. And here's the point. Think of all that went before this. All of the verbal compliments, all of the kissing, all of the touching, all of the enticing, all of the patience that went into this particular act that is about to take place. Here's the application. Great sex, God's way, involves time, tender words, visual teasing, touch, and lots of talk. It's not microwave. It's a lot of care and affection. And what happens here is where it gets interesting. He says, I came to my garden, my sister, my bride. I gathered my myrrh with my spice. I ate my honeycomb with my honey. I drank my wine with my milk. They were intimate. Now, what makes this so interesting, and I'll let you know why I didn't skip over this here in a few minutes. There was 111 verses before this. There is 111 verses after this. The moment they are intimate on their wedding night is dead center in the book. Interesting, isn't it? But coupled with this moment of intimacy is this short little verse that is part of it at the very end that really makes this special. And here's where it says, all of a sudden, out of no place, you have somebody who is with them. Somebody who is with them in the bridal chamber who speaks some words. And this is the words that is spoken. Eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers. Now, who is it that is with them in the bridal chamber on their wedding night? Who would be observing them in this passionate, hot, intimate, romantic moment? And who would be even encouraging them to eat and drink more of it? In fact, to drink their fill of it. It is God. God shows up dead center of this book in one verse, and he puts his blessing upon their passionate, romantic, sexual intimacy in their marriage. And he encourages them to enjoy it and to have their fill of it. In fact, he encourages them to enjoy it as much as they want from that point forevermore. Drink your fill of it, O lovers. Not just on their wedding night, but on any other night that goes forward in their marriage. God is glorified by passionate, intimate, caring sexual intimacy between a husband and a wife. He is pleased with it. Did you realize that God blesses your intimacy as a husband and a wife? And he tells you to drink your fill of it. That is how God is glorified. He made you man and he made you male and female. And he made the institution of marriage to be able to express and enjoy that kind of intimacy. Now, isn't that pretty cool? I just thought this is so cool that intentionally there is details here in the front end. Details that make us uncomfortable with the passion level that goes on between this couple. But in these details, all of a sudden, God comes in the back end and he gives a thumbs up and a blessing to all of it for a married couple. To me, that is so exciting that God blesses our marriages. Yes, God? Okay. All right. Here's the way we're going to apply this at the end. If you are a married couple, know that God blesses your intimacy and he commands you to drink your fill of it. That's good. If you are not married and you are single, maintain your virginity. Give that as a wonderful gift to your spouse on your wedding night. And then from that night on forward, drink your fill of intimacy. It is a gift for you from God. And when you use it and experience it, it brings glory to him. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for challenging us from your word. You know, I was really nervous about being able to teach this because it makes me uncomfortable. But yet, Lord, you put this word in the book because you know we need it. I pray for married couples that they would have a new understanding of marital intimacy as a way they bring glory to you and that you encourage them to drink their fill of it. I pray for singles that you would give them a newfound resolve to maintain their virginity in honor to you and as a gift they can give to their spouse on their wedding night, knowing that from that night forward, they may enjoy the passion of marriage. Thank you so much for what you are teaching us from your word. We ask this in Christ's precious name.